So welcome, everyone. You have tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And who are Paradigm Shifters? People who are doing things differently, people who are pushing change into the collective consciousness of our species. This is a time, as we keep hearing, it's a time of the shift. And everybody that I talk to here on Paradigm Shifters is actually making a big difference, making a conscious choice to participate in the shift of human consciousness. So tonight I have a really wonderful guest who was brought to us by Christian Minson, who did a show on transformational breath some months ago, and people absolutely loved it. And of course, Judith, he referred to you quite a lot, so I knew we had to get you on too. So this is Judith Kravitz, who is the brains or the instigator of Transformational Breath Foundation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica. It's very nice to be here with you and to share with your audience all about transformational breathing.
Well, now I think you have, I'm really excited you're here because I had to chase you down because you're all over the world, girl, aren't you?
I am. Well, not all over, but to lots of wonderful places and places where I think the breath and consciousness shifts are really needed. So
I'm
excited about that we're being used well.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, I would like you to tell how you got started in this. It seems to me I heard that you were unwell or something and you moved into it for
Yes, it was in the 70s and I was living in Northern California at the time and very much part of the spiritual revolution that was going on. I was a metaphysical minister at that time and had an opportunity to experience some breath work in pretty much a different form. It was one of the earlier stages of rebirthing.
Oh, wonderful.
And I had a session with one of the rebirthers and I felt the power of the breath in general. And soon was guided to combine that with the healing, the spiritual healing that I was already doing. And as I did that, I started to receive a lot of guidance about making changes in the form and the consciousness and bringing other modalities into it. But around the beginning of that time, several years after, it was discovered that I had a throat cancer. And I was pretty young at that time and had two small children and was also into metaphysics, so it seemed very strange. I thought I had a healthy life. So I was up against making a choice of do I follow the allopathic route, which was pretty much the way many people went then. Alternative healing was not the thing to do, much different now. It's very much a viable option. But I prayed, and the guidance was very clear to walk my talk, to follow my path. And so my guidance was to work on self-healing, and the tool that I knew was the most powerful, even though I didn't know all that much about it, was the breath. And so I began breathing in the form that I knew at that time.
What was your metaphysical practice before that? What was your spiritual orientation before that?
Well, it was, I think you would call it New Age, non-denominational, mm-hmm. and New Thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and you did it with mind, or did you use energy, or what?
What worked with spirit and with the ascended masters and beings of light, and also worked with something called scientific prayer, which is comes from the early occult teachings of Science of Mind, Ernest Holm, and Blavatsky, and all of them. So it has that background, but it was more of a modern version of that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I began doing the breathing every day and could really feel things going on, going deep into myself and getting understanding and guidance about the issues in my throat and different pieces of information about things I needed to change in my life.
Were you getting a lot of emotional awarenesses and so on?
I was. I could literally feel waves of anger coming up as I was breathing. Feel them dissolve, and just more and more insights about how to work with the breath and how to continue my journey with it. But one day, one day about 6 months later, I was putting lotion on my body and felt around my throat. And the lump was gone. And part of my guidance was don't give it a lot of energy. Don't pay a lot of attention to it. So I did, and I took mirrors away, and then, so that's why I was surprised and just really knew when it wasn't there that it was a miracle, and I really felt the breath was the key tool that led me to that place.
Hmm.
And in that moment, I just felt like I really want to share this with the world, and the this wasn't really formulated all that well, but once I made that commitment, more and more things came to me, how to keep improving and bringing more things into the breath work. And originally tried to take some of the changes to the rebirthing community, and they weren't interested. So my guidance was, it's something different. You need to call it something different. So that's how transformational breathing was formed and birthed.
What did your doctor say about your throat?
You know, I just never looked back. I never looked back. I never went back. It was sort of like I made a choice and probably haven't been to the doctor since, you know. Like, I'm just not a doctor person. I had my last child, I had six more children after that. Much
surprised. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I have eight children totally, but my last child was emergency cesarean, and that was the last doctor I think I went to like 24 years ago. So I'm just not a... So
you must have been able to use.
A path.
you must have been able to use breathing for giving birth, eh?
I used it in birth to some degree, but really fine tuned it working with my daughters and them having their children. I have 10 grandchildren. I was at 8 of the births, and we breathe those little babies in. And it's one thing, you know, being the objective coach versus the one in labor, you know.
Need a good objective.
But I did breathe, have breathed a lot, just keeping myself clear and present and de-stressed and healthy and all kinds of, you know, wonderful gifts the breath has given me.
Well, I noticed also that you have many tracks in your Transformational Breath Foundation, meaning they're simplistic kind of healing levels, and then there's kind of transcendent or very high spiritual or personal destiny healing tracks, eh?
Well, I think we like to call it levels because it's a breathing system that has three different levels, and we focus initially on the physical level, opening the breath, bringing more energy in the body, more, aliveness and nutrients to the cells and balance in the energy system. And then we use the breath as a tool for the mental and emotional, and really as an amazing way of clearing the negativity in the subconscious, accessing energetic patterns at the cellular level and changing their vibrational state. And then also our ultimate stage is the spiritual, which happens all along, and we use the breath to access higher levels of consciousness and bring, let's say, more of our spiritual nature into our experience and reality. So you're right. We have all those things going on with the breath, and usually simultaneously. So that's the amazing part, that you can't really separate our mind, body, and spirit. So things are happening on all those levels all the time.
Well, so, and when, and I really appreciate that. That's so true, isn't it? Have you got some stories for us about people that you've worked with, like maybe somebody who comes with a serious physical, or somebody that's got, have you ever worked with really strong mental health situations?
Yes and yes. You know, since I was the pioneer and have worked with literally hundreds of thousands of people, you could just name it. And I've put myself out there to be the one who will experiment and say, well, does TB help this? And I'll say, well, I don't know, but let's try it. And essentially there isn't any situation where I haven't seen it be beneficial, but some amazing situations happen on the physical level because a number of reasons. One, there's a number of what we call anaerobic diseases, which are diseases like cancer that cannot live in an oxygenated field.
Right.
So when we introduce lots more oxygen into the system, into the cells, and also the prana into the energy field, amazing things happen on the physical level, but also having the metaphysical basis, we know that disease is created in mind and emotion, so we also work on that level as well, working at the level of cause, and that's like not a band-aid, that's the going to the essence of whatever the issues are. So a lot of psychological, different people diagnosed with a lot of different, we call them labels, psychological labels.
Anything like bipolar that people...
Yes, bipolar, manic depressive, multiple personality, lots of them. And we have some things in place when we work with people with those symptoms or like labels, because we want to do it in a constructive way. So we make sure they have they're working with a therapist. The therapist knows they're doing the breath work. So if they need support, or let's say just support and contact in a conscious way after the breathing or while they're going through the breathing, that something's in place.
Well, now tell me, do people generally have like a healing crisis? So for example, if someone is emotionally extremely in pain or something, do they go through a period where they just feel absolutely crazy before they get released?
Not really. I mean, the amazing thing, and I think this is why it's catching on so fast, is that the healing and the integration takes place during the session. And then when you leave the session, that piece is integrated and you go home. So you do your work in the session because it's all energetic. And then your life is very different because these internal pieces that were creating experience in your life are no longer there. Vibrationally, you are different. You are, let's say, vibrating at a different frequency, and these external patterns have changed their energetic state. So we do the work in the session, and then afterward, you're pretty free. So, and our, let's just say the way we work with people is we don't stop a session until someone feels good. So until that integration takes place. But normally the sessions don't go beyond an hour and a half, an hour to an hour and a half. So it happens because we know how to work with the breath so that resolution is accomplished very effectively.
That's really exciting, actually. Tell me this, is it now that so many people and the frequencies on the planet and in the universe apparently are actually moving up, so do you find that the breathing moves people faster than it used to, or has it changed at all?
It's really changed, and you know, I've been doing this for 33 years, and I keep being impressed by what can happen in a session, and I think part of it is because the energies have speeded up and that the so-called veil is thinner, so people can connect and open more quickly, and more things can integrate. And I've literally seen people's whole lives change in an hour, and I'm like, knowing I'm not doing it, and I'm really impressed by not only the technique, but by the spiritual support we get when we do it. And I'm like, holy Toledo, you know. I think that's why I keep doing it, because it's like, wow, it's way beyond really what I think is possible. And that's what we love about working with spirit, is that it is beyond human.
Change the energy, change the reality, right?
Yes, yeah.
Tell me, can you talk a bit about something like cancer or MS or the brain patterns? Can you talk about people that have, you know, been clients or something?
Well, we've had, you know, we do these programs, and I think our main program are these week-long programs we call the Breath Seminar, and it can be done in a 5.5-day consecutive, or it can be done in 3 weekends. And it's where people come and they have about 14 sessions, plus we work with other modalities and we do other processes with them. And it's amazing. It's just amazing what happens. So we're willing to take on. We've had people with MS. We've had people with Parkinson's. We've had people with brain injury. We've had people Down syndrome. We've had people with...
You know, what happens with Down syndrome people? Can you install a different brain pattern?
We don't do the scientific part, but we do watch who, you know, their coordination and their connection and their responsiveness when they come in, and see the changes when they leave, their confidence level, and it's phenomenal. I can tell a story. There was one of our facilitators had a 24-year-old daughter with Down syndrome, and she was just a very, very sweet gal, but couldn't look you in the eye and very uncoordinated. We do some movement, you know, and dance, and when we started, she wasn't coordinated. and just kind of our eyes were sort of rolling all over the place and things. And so throughout the week, she would go in, and as long as someone can follow instruction and do the breathing, they can have meaningful sessions. So she was willing, and she was able to stay focused. And throughout the week, we noticed little by little, she got more coordinated with the dancing. She was able to connect. She was able to talk just better. Her sentences were better. Her mom was noticing she was definitely more present. So the very last night of our program, we do like a little, it's not even a talent show, it's where the people just get up and they, in their groups, express themselves. And she actually led her group in a dance routine.
Oh,
everybody,
wow.
I mean, the victory of that whole thing, everybody was crying because here was someone that was so, I would call it lovingly, out of it when we began, and the shift was so dramatic. And so she went on and took our facilitator course, literally, and began working with her friends. That's the kind of abilities that she was able to. So much of our capacity has to do with oxygen and blood getting to our brain, and the brain is this amazing, I don't even know what to call it. It's more than a tool or an organ that
it's regenerative, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So you give it the right properties, the oxygen, the blood, the you know, increased activity, and it can do amazing things.
What about broken bones? I'm pushing you here.
Yeah. Well, I know my youngest son had a snowboard accident in, this January, so it hasn't even been a year, and he broke four bones in his spine and his clavicle, broke his clavicle, and we were just thankful he wasn't, you know, paralyzed, that he came down off the mountain, and he was a trained facilitator, and told him, you know, you just take it easy and breathe. And in less than a month, he was back to normal life.
Broken bones were healed?
They were in the process of healing still, but he was back to school. He had his job again. I said, like, take some time off. And he goes, no, Mom, I feel fine. So I know the breathing, because what happens is when we have a trauma, we pull our awareness away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of detach from that place. You pay attention if you hurt yourself. But what we train people to do is to literally breathe awareness into those places. And guess what? That you may be uncomfortable for a while, but then that helps heal the trauma, the memory of the experience, and also brings oxygen and prana and healing life force there. So I know that's what he did, you know, because I was leading him on the phone several times. So
wow,
amazing. And very similar to my sister who broke her arm 2 years ago, and we worked with her with the breathing as well. So personally, from a very personal experience, yes, with broken bones. And I broke my knee leading a workshop in Croatia. And I was doing a workshop 3 weeks later too. I was still had my little cast on, but I was up, out and about. And
yay! Well, that's great story, Judith.
Yeah.
And now, of course, I have to jump to aging. You know, maybe Alzheimer's or just simply the aging body, mind, brain. Have you worked with people with that?
Oh, we have, and with Alzheimer's, what I've heard, and I tend to believe, is it has a lot of metal
metal
poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, of course, our breathing is responsible for 80% of our detoxification. So we're helping that process when we do the breathing and work with people as long as, once again, they are together enough to follow instruction, which most people are, it can help. So we've had a number of people who have just been more alert and more coherent through the breathing. And so someone, you know, said, should I work, you know, send my mom, she has Alzheimer's. Yep, if she can follow instructions, because it absolutely can hurt. And the ability to bring more awareness and alertness in through breathing is just, it's a no-brainer. So, but also to help detox and bring people in more consciousness. So
it's very interesting. Have you worked in any kind of, I mean, it's fascinating to me because I know that if you raise the oxygen level, for example, you can't have cancer in your body, right? Or
right. That's Otto Warburg's work with, you know, won the Nobel Prize many years ago for that concept. And, of course, it hasn't been adopted here because there's a whole very profitable medical paradigm around, you know, the radiation and the surgeries and everything else. So, but yes, he definitely proved the relationship between cancer cells and oxygen. So.
What do you think causes cancer? This is a kind of a general question I throw at most of you wonderful healers.
Yeah. well, I think there's different levels, definitely emotionally. I don't want to, and it has to do with feelings of hurt and resentment and anger inside. But also on the physical level, I think it's, an imbalance and the alkaline, you know, the alkalinity and the acidic levels, and also stress and a weakened immune system. And then there's some things that you can't explain, you know, that are people's destiny. And so, you know, I think it's a combination of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that more and more people are not accepting let's say the sentence they're getting, oh, you have fourth stage, you have so many weeks to live. I'm thinking, what a horrible thing to say to someone. And they're taking off in other directions. I've worked at Hippocrates Center in Florida. It's an alternative healing spa where they do a lot of live foods, and and they brought the breath work in, and it's phenomenal when people you know, restore their blood and clean their body out and breathe what's possible. Like, it was almost 100% remission. So,
isn't that exciting, eh?
It is.
it's all within our own. I mean, you don't have to have machines and so on to do that, do you?
No, you don't. I mean, they're making oxygen, you know, hyperbaric chambers and ozone and hydrogen peroxide where you can go buy the oxygen, but we like the idea of just learning to breathe better. That would be much more ecological. Learn to breathe.
You know, I'm fascinated by the fact that our society is changing radically, and that, for example, the male power over things has changed, and the male archetype, for example, is kind of coming apart and needs to be refunded and recreated. And prostate cancer is a widespread thing for men. So I kind of am thinking, while you say that, it is a way of, or do you have something to say about that? I'll shut up here and let you talk.
Well, I've worked with men with that condition, and we look at where the energy is going in the body, i.e. where the breath is going in the body, and the men that we've worked with that have those symptoms, they're simply not breathing into the lower parts of their respiratory system using their diaphragm. And so a lot of times when you start breathing with the diaphragm, bringing the breath all the way down into the lowest parts of the system, there's incredible changes that happen, and people get more grounded, they get more focused in their lives, and that energy goes to that part of the body. And so that's kind of how we approach it. But that's also our individual power center. So when that's not open, I'm sure there's some misalignment with power. And it's interesting how the men get the prostate and so many of the women get the breast cancer. So
yeah, I think that's fascinating at times, you know. I don't mean coldly fascinating, but we're talking the paradigm here. We're talking about the big shift in the collective. I'm very excited about what you're doing, and I wonder if you could give us a breath example that people at home could try before we go on to some more digging and enjoying.
Sure. Well, one of the unique things about what we're doing is we're creating an energy field that comes into our electromagnetic field. So the way we breathe is that, first of all, we make sure we're accessing the whole respiratory system. And the only way to do that in a natural way is to use our diaphragm. So the first thing we do is, how do you know you're using your diaphragm? Well, you put your hand on your stomach and your lower abdomen, and you take a breath in. And if your stomach and lower abdomen don't rise, then you're using the wrong muscles. And that's where we begin. And so probably 40% of the people we work with don't even use their diaphragm to breathe. They use the chest muscles, the intercostal muscles, their back muscles, their neck muscles to breathe. And so what we want to do is just get people to breathe with their diaphragm.
So where is it you put your hand? I'm practicing here. I put my
On your lower abdomen, and lower stomach, right almost to the pubic bone.
Okay.
And you're going to take a breath in and feel that rise. And if it doesn't rise, try to make it rise with your, not with your stomach muscles, but feel your diaphragm, which is along your rib cage, and feel that use, you know, feel that go into use. And take a breath in. And then the exhale, simply just relaxing that muscle.
So you relax your lower muscle to breath out.
Yeah. You just relax the diaphragm. So the diaphragm, you use it when you breathe in. It goes down into the abdominal cavity. And then to exhale, you just relax it. And then we do that without any pausing. And that's what creates this energy field. So we could just do that together for a minute, and people will right away feel energy, and not so much so that we stir up a bunch of patterns, but we could do it so people can really just get a sense of, this is how I'm supposed to breathe. This is the natural, effective way of breathing. So we could just put our hands on our lower stomach and abdomen. You want to lean back. You don't want to be sitting up and holding. You want to have back support.
Okay, here we are leaning back, both of us.
Yeah. And we're going to breathe through our mouth, and we're going to breathe in, and the belly goes up, and then relax. Breathe in, the belly goes up, and relax. And we're going to do it that fast. Breathe in, relax. Breathe in, relax. Breathe in. Very good.
Uh-huh.
And some of you, just you can keep breathing for another minute or so. Now, some of you are going to feel lightheaded because the oxygen is coming into the body and say, oh, I feel dizzy, but it's really not a dizziness. You're just feeling oxygen going to the brain, and it's just kind of a new sensation. You won't pass out from breathing. Some of you may even feel a little tingling in the beginning because this is energy, how we feel energy in our electromagnetic field. So that's all natural, and if one were to continue like that, you may feel different feelings or different sensations, may even have memories of being a baby or a child, and so all kinds of phenomenal things happen when you continue to breathe like that. But the first thing is just check in and like, how do I breathe? So if your belly's going up and down, then maybe you need to put your hand on your chest and see if that part's moving. And that should move simultaneously with your belly. So if your belly goes up, a second later the chest should move out. And then and as you exhale, the chest goes down and the belly goes down. So it's essentially like a wave. And it's maybe a little, it's easier to see than describe, but definitely people can get a sense of, how it works through that. And some people are, very few people breathe like that naturally because we've shut down our breathing for lots of reasons.
Well, I notice when we talk about panicking or being afraid of something or being really concerned about something, often at that point I catch myself not breathing.
Or emotions or not feeling like expressing ourselves or trying to detach from an experience. There's so many reasons why we just stop breathing. And it starts really, really early. Our breathing patterns come in very early, and nobody taught us how to breathe differently. So they just stay with us, whether the conditions are the same or not.
So what's the difference between this and rebirthing? Is the breathing itself a different style?
It is. I can tell you some other differences. They work with upper respiratory breathing, which is not diaphragmatic breathing, actually. And so that kind of opens the chest, can open the chest and access things that are in that area of the body. But the subconscious is clearly located in the lower chakras, or the lower parts of the respiratory system. So that's one. So we work with a different breath. The breathing is connected like we did, but not full. And we work with sound. We bring toning in to work with overwhelming patterns. We also do hands-on and movement.
Just toning, like making the sounds that come through you or any playing?
Yeah, specifically guided and directed sounds to help move the energy as well. So that's an incredible gift to have in the breath work. And we also work with invocations, which are ways of invoking, let's say, spiritualizing the sessions by invoking the spiritual masters, and also invoking higher self participation, and just taking it up a notch from the mental and emotional level to the spiritual, which, as you know, is working in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
We also, like I said, do movement and invocations, and a lot of hands-on. We find the muscles that control the breathing. We have different acupressure points that we stimulate to, activate and clear cellular memory.
Hmm.
So,
is it like EFT, that sort of tapping kind of situation?
No, we're not tapping. We go in and kind of in the same, similar than the Chinese acupuncture points. There's different places in the body that represent different mental and emotional patterns that have been stored at the cellular level. So we go in and put some pressure on those points, and that stimulates, let's say, those issues from the past that have been stored, and the breathing integrates or resolves it. But then there's another way we work with hands-on, in that we understand, let's say, muscles that are being used unnecessarily or muscles that are controlling the breathing, and work with pressure on those muscles to literally restructure or mold the breathing patterns, which is
so you can actually change your breathing patterns, even though you're older and so on.
Yes, because a lot of our breathing patterns are so unconscious. So there's muscles being used that don't need to be used, or that are protecting us, or let's just say keeping the status quo and thinking they're protecting us, that can be modified by pressure or, shifting those muscles and stuff. So it's pretty wonderful thing to be able to do, to be that proactive with someone's breathing pattern.
That's exciting. Well, and you've had a number of children. How early do people start working with their children with this style? Sounds like we should be teaching them to breathe at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of my passions. I have worked with many, many babies. Matter of fact, the last training I just did a few weeks ago in Italy, I worked with a little newborn. He was 9 days old, and his mom was finishing the facilitator training. And so we can work with them from birth on.
How do you work with them? Because they're not really ready to listen to you in a way. Are they empathizing?
Their soul is. Their soul is ready to do some work. And so we can communicate with the soul and just let them know that you're there, and very responsive. And you just start. There's certain places you can put your hands on a little baby to bring the breathing in, just very light pressure that stimulates the diaphragmatic breathing, and they just start breathing, and the memories come up from their birth or anything else they're ready to resolve.
I should imagine that's the most exciting work in the world, is it?
It is. I love working with children. That's one of my pet passions is getting breathing into the school, so that children have this tool all their lives and can stay healthy and connected and have a tool to work with their unresolved emotions. So, yeah.
It seems to me that it would be a tool for getting them into their authenticity at a younger age, eh?
Yes.
They're
pretty darn authentic already.
But you know what I mean? Because they take on other people's feelings, and they have all kinds of reactions going on. And it takes away from who we really are sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But they, you know, their journey back is so much faster than adults, and they're just so sweet. I was at a conference in Spain the month before. And
my, you do get around, girl.
I do. I should tell you about the work we're doing in Kuwait, too, which is amazing.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that. I'm sure the listeners
would. It was an international breath conference, and my role this year, I was keynoted for several years, but they said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to work with the children this year. So we did a beautiful children and parents workshop where it just seemed to be children of every age. It was amazing. We had babies and we had teenagers and all from all different countries, maybe 10 different countries. It was amazing. And the parents, we worked, had a little class for the parents, and then they worked with the children and we supervised them. It was so beautiful to, you know, the kids were restless and bouncing off the walls, and by, you know, when they started breathing, they just get to this very beautiful, open, angelic state. And then afterward, we have them draw pictures, and all of them are drawing pictures of angels and rainbows and stuff like that. It's just incredibly sweet. Very,
wow. So what about if you were having, have you ever experienced people who were, let's say, criminals, felons, or teenagers who are going crazy, or you know how that dark stuff hits a lot of the teenagers these days?
Yeah, a lot of it. And from my own family too. One of my daughters was a teenager, she was very much part of, I think the, it's very strong. She's probably stronger in the United States than any culture I've been in, but the drug, I don't know what to call
kind
it.
Kind of a goth thing?
Social. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, so her, I knew some of her friends were having challenges with drugs, and when they asked what I did, some of them sounded really interested, and I said, well, let me do a workshop for your friends. And so we did, and there was probably 12 of these teenagers came, and we breathed. I had some helpers, and we breathed them, and at the end, a couple of them sat up, and they go, wow, that's better than drugs. I'll never forget when this kid said that, and everyone could feel the high of the endorphins and the oxygen in the brain, and I'm not sure if any of them went down the you know, straight narrow path after that, but what I felt I knew for sure is that they had an experience of an alternative that was beyond what any drug could do, you know, just the natural without the side effects. The stories could go on and on about it. We had one young man just recently who was a friend of my son's, just had gotten in the wrong direction and was seriously, drinking and doing drugs, prescription drugs by his doctor, plus drinking, and was just, his life was falling apart. And I just had this hit to invite him to the program, and he did, and his whole life has changed around, and like he did a week, and now he's coming to be trained to be a facilitator, and just got in touch with who he is, why he's here. It's just phenomenal. And my son is saying, wow, he's so different now, Mom. You know, it's so.
And how old is he, Judith?
He's 24.
Okay. So it's one of the aspects that you talk about is getting in touch with your destiny, right? Is that sort of what you see him?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he was this very naturally spiritual kid growing up in a, kind of an insensitive environment, him being very sensitive. So I think the drugs were a way of just preserving his feelings, protecting him, keeping him from being hurt. And so when he got in an environment where there were other sensitive, open people, it was safe for him to go there and just have some, you know, and get in touch with a lot of wounding and a lot of misunderstanding, and actually that week freed him of the drugs. So.
And did he need to talk? Do people need to express a lot? Say somebody is troubled. We'll pick that young man, and he goes to a week. Does he need to express a lot, or does it change of its own? I mean, do you have a system where people can talk about it, or write about it, or paint about it?
Yeah, we do journaling, and then we also break into small groups so that before and after each session, there's some processing and goal setting and definitely, because the process is so deep and intense, that definitely you want to have things in place for people to share their experience and get questions answered. And he needed a lot of additional support, which was definitely there for him. So
you must have a lot of people at these gatherings. Like, where are the gatherings? All over the world, I assume, but there must be some here.
They are. They're, and I'm not the only one doing them now. We've got probably 20 other trainers that are doing them. But, for example, I do them in, let's see, Kuwait and Turkey and, Italy and Mexico and the U.S. And I'm going up to Vancouver for the first time, in about 10 days.
Oh, wonderful. That's less than an hour. That's about an hour away from me.
Yeah. Well, we'll be doing some evening workshops there.
Okay.
People just said they could go on the website, and then we're doing a week-long program, and the program may be full, or we may have one or two spots left because of the size of our venue, but normally our staff ratio is about 2-1.
Oh, I see.
So there is a lot of support, and we feel people need a lot of support, so it's structured that way because you just go as deep as you can go, right into your essence and right into the core issue. So.
Wow. I mean, it really is quite something, isn't it? So what about when people are dying? Have you worked with that group?
I have, and most memorably, I worked with my mom during transition, and it's very much a wonderful tool that can be used when you choose to use it for that. So you make sure you have a plan for that. And I've been called into the hospital a number of times to help some clients or some parents of clients make that transition. And it's very beautiful because when you breathe, we train you to relax on the exhale. So there's a whole area in our solar plexus where we tighten up, where we hold on to fear. So if we can relax that place, people can literally relax and let go of the fear of death, or really it's just a fear of letting go and trusting.
Well, my feeling is, wouldn't it be hard if people are in the process of transiting, isn't it hard for them to actually breathe consciously? You know, do they have the energy for that?
Well, it does, you know, we breathe anyway. It's just kind of speeding it up. But a number of people have told me, and I noticed this with my mom, that they call it the death rattle, that people go into this connected breathing, a lot of them organically, when they're going through transition. And I think part of it is there's a need to clear the subconscious before you can let go of the emotional body to go on, or to heal the emotional body before you go on. And so it's almost a very natural thing, but if it's guided with intention, it can be even more profound.
Well, I imagine, I'm just assuming that the person can also, get in step with you as you're breathing, that sort of thing?
Yes, yes.
Pick it up empathically?
Yeah. More than that, we model it, and they can breathe with us, so yes.
Mm-hmm. And you're working with their higher self. So mm-hmm. Let's tell us about your classes again. I'm kind of excited about this. So you're going to Vancouver, and you're going to do introduction evenings, but then you're going to do a 5-day?
Yes. So we're going to do it. It's the 9th and 10th. We'll do the evening workshops, and then the 11th through the 16th, we'll do our seminar program at a beautiful farm. I think it's about an hour outside of Vancouver. And it's just amazing. And I've been so excited to go there, too. I've never been there. So.
Oh, you've never been to Vancouver. Where are you from?
No.
Where'd you start out?
Well, I was born in New Jersey, but spent most of my life in California. And now I'm living on the East Coast in New England and New Hampshire. So.
When you're home, that is.
Yeah.
So what do you, people start off, do you recommend people start off like practicing, or then they go into a practitioner and the practitioners are listed on your website?
I would say people should go to an introductory workshop or find a practitioner in their area to begin with, because it's a huge commitment. A week is a huge commitment, but so many people go and there's a part of them that knows, I need to do this. This is what I need now, and they go forward. And some people do one session, they go, I want to share this with the world, and they jump in and, you know, decide to take the program, the facilitator program, and then even beyond that, we have a teacher training program.
And how long does it take to go through all that?
Not that long. We've been able to kind of really condense a real quality program, but someone could actually go through the whole program in a year if the timing is. So they may have to globetrot a little to catch all the different levels in order. But
which can be so fun if you want to.
Yeah. We just did a training in Turkey.
So listen, how did you get started in Kuwait and in Turkey and in these places that seem to be,
well,
you know, off their normal
map? Yeah. It's so different for each place. The Kuwait thing happened because the organizer there, the lady who organizes people coming there for different programs, she knew she wanted to do, have breath work come there. I'm not sure how she knew that. And she did research, and then she got real clear that she wanted us to come there, and she contacted me. And part of it is like, well, if you don't know what it is and you never did it, and you know, it's just a lot bigger and it's big. And so I kind of tried to discourage her, but she was so clear and focused about.
And was she Kuwaiti or was she American or?
No, she's a Kuwait lady. And, part of me really felt a calling to go to that part of the world and help empower and liberate, the women there. And so I knew one day I would be going to some country, and I thought it was Turkey, but Turkey's pretty open, but Kuwait is semi-open, mm-hmm. but there's still a lot of, I think some restrictions of the women and their expression and, how they, their status.
Well, so how were you received there by the culture, by other people?
Well, very well. We could only have a mixed evening workshop. And then when we did the deeper work, it had to be all women. And the women, they're hungry for it. They're starving for it. They love it, you know. And so it's been very well received. And also working with maybe generations and generations of closure and non-expression. And so it's like a bit of a journey to get their breath open to integrate. Who knows who they're integrating the emotions for, how many lifetimes or generations, but they're so naturally spiritual that once they open up, it's just so beautiful. So,
and you said Turkey is more open. Tell me about that. I have no idea.
Yeah. Turkey is even, not even though, but it is a primarily Muslim country. The majority of the women are not covered, and there seems to be a real revolution going on in consciousness in Turkey, and our groups are very, very big there and very well received, and we're growing at a phenomenal rate in Turkey. So, we're on TV and, you know, major TV shows and magazines and very, you know, kind of really the thing to do now over in Turkey. It's amazing.
Isn't that wonderful? Another thing, it occurs to me while you're talking, I'm going, well, gee, when you're doing groups of people, then you're shifting, like there's a common field developing amongst the people. If they're all breathing, for example, in a room, does that happen very often?
Yes. And that's one of the benefits of doing group work is that you feel and experience what's going on for the group, and that's, you know, that can be really powerful and valuable, I think, for the whole country or the whole area. So that's definitely part of it.
Yeah, I was thinking
people feel it.
And we keep talking about, for example, when the Maharishi did the that long 3 months meditation around Washington D.C., that sort of thing, and how the crime rate dropped. So, you know, because we had that conversation several times recently, I'm really aware of, for example, what you're doing and the impact it could have all around us, you know. We've got to get to the inner cities of this country.
Yes, and there's people, the beautiful thing is there's so many people who are training in it, and they go off into different fields, you know, working with the children or the prisoners or the, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. The different places people are being called, therapists and medical doctors, and you know, it's just amazing that.
Well, it really appears to change people's brain, and of course, we're all pretty obsessed these days with whether it's Alzheimer's or ADD or ADHD and all these like bipolar, all these different brain things. But I'm seeing as you're talking how people's brains can actually morph to recreate the way they function, can't they?
Yes. And we just see it and feel it all the time.
Are you working with ADD people or
I am.
Autism?
I am. The ADT I can address because we worked in a school. One of my facilitators opened a school, a bilingual school in Mexico. And I thought it was, she invited me there, and I thought, oh, this cute little cottage, and I get there, and it's this huge 3-story building with, you know, almost 1,000 kids. And
oh, wow.
In 1 week, we worked with all the kids, but one of the groups we worked with consistently was the children who were the ADT, And
what's ADT? What's the difference between ADD and ADT?
ADD, I meant, excuse
okay.
me. And what happened is there was pretty much a group of boys, say between 7 and 11, were the primary candidates. And when we started to breathe them, the school psychologist came in because she was going to observe us and see mm-hmm. what was going on. And they came in and they were super restless and bouncing off each other and pounding on each other. And, you know, and she looked at us like, well, good luck. And we finally got them breathing and we sat them in the chair. We didn't lay them down because it just wasn't what would work for them. And we got them breathing and they breathed for about 15 minutes and she couldn't believe, she says, I can't believe how different the energy feels. But what we noticed is that most of them were not breathing in their belly. They were not in their bodies, and part of it is their inability to focus because they weren't grounded in their bodies. So we see that as one of the primary causes of those symptoms is that the energy, the life force is not fully in the body, so it's not grounded, basically.
And why do you think that happened, or do you ever cogitate that kind of thing?
Yeah, it primarily happens at birth. And it has to do with, you know, just kind of coming into this world and realizing, like, hey, I don't think I want to be here, and not fully coming into the physical form. And many people make that decision when they come in, and so they're only halfway or a third in the body. They're not, they just haven't fully entered. So.
I think that's really interesting because everybody these days, there are a lot of young people these days have death images all over them. You know?
Yeah.
So we have
yeah.
the ADD and they don't necessarily want to be fully here. And then you look around, there's skeletons
no.
everywhere. And I'm like, is
no.
this a shadow part of humanity facing a rather dire time, isn't it?
It is. And the tragedy of it can be turned around so easily that it's not irreversible. And I would just encourage as many people as possible to explore breathing as a possibility of, you know, just really, because the shadow and the darkness and the dysfunction isn't who we are, and so it can be overcome. And the breath and life force and spirit, because they're all the same, is the way to work with it. It can be the way to work with it, and pretty amazing.
Have you, and I know we're almost done, but I just wanted to ask you, in your family, which is a rather large, robust family, have you all breathed together consciously in such a way?
We have, and there's some in my family that are real pro breathers and have gotten trained in the work, and then there's some that are not it, you know, will maybe wait until they're in crisis or something before they breathe, but all my children have breathed, and their mates, and you know, some are more into it than others. But when the kids were little, we definitely did. It was, you know, every Saturday morning they would have a breathing session, and it was like, well, we're not going to the mall, we're not going to the movies, we're not, you know, Saturday morning breathing, and then we do that first, and then we'll, you know, have our fun. And then when they were little too, their time out would be, they would go into the spot and they would do 100 breaths. That would be their timeout thing. They would do 100 breaths, and their whole attitude would change after the 100 breaths. It would be amazing.
Hey, about our Mexican school, let's pop back to Mexico since you're a world traveler, and I always would love to be. What happened with the ADD children and the Mexican school?
Well, we worked with them that week, and we were setting up a program to go back, and I had about 15 facilitators from all over the world who volunteered to go back there and work some more. And it was really interesting, but the teachers, because some of the kids got emotional, the teenagers got emotional when we worked with them,
mm-hmm.
the teachers got scared that the parents would object.
Oh, no.
And even though we notified the parents that we would be doing it. And my friend who owned the school just got really pressured. So they pulled back from us doing the research that we were going to do, but they also let us come in and initiate a protocol, like a 5-minute protocol each day for the kids to breathe. So, and I feel like we could go back there, and it's something that I'm wanting to look into and do. So
I'd love to have follow up on the ADD
yeah.
situation or the autism kind of situations.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It'd be wonderful. So, you know, I think we're almost done here. And I know you're going to be in Vancouver. We have about 4 minutes left. And I know you're going to be in Vancouver soon, but would you like to talk about anything else that's coming up and give your website address so people can get hold of you?
Sure. Our website is breathe2000.com, breathe2000.com, or transformationalbreathing.com. And so folks could access and read more about it and see, see what we're doing all over. There's a lot of good information, and I tend not to be in the scientific vein, so they could come and, you know, just learn more about the, there is a lot of science that we have and information in that way. And,
you mean there have been researches done that, that tell results? Is that?
Yeah, there is, and good information about physiological and things like that with the breath. So
it's really exciting, isn't it, Judith?
It is. It is. It's like it's such a natural thing, and it's just nice we're coming back to it, coming back to our breath, because it's definitely time if we're going to talk about paradigms, the paradigm is for us to be who we are and realize our full potential. And that's what I see the ability the breath has to do is give us that vitality of life that allows us to realize our full potential.
And do it in a rather community consciousness, which I think is for me an underlying value. And I just want to chuckle for a minute and say it's interesting that your throat, which to me often says, your will and the will of God come together to get the wisdom, and it's your throat that's putting this wisdom forward in all its journeying, isn't it?
It is, and my body getting on that plane. It's not my throat; it's my body, legs, and everything else. So it's definitely it is. I feel like we're just definitely being used for a higher will and purpose.
I'm so thrilled. It's just a wonderful, wonderful service you're giving the world. You paradigm shifter, you.
Thank you. And I hope that maybe you can come up to Vancouver and be our guest at the workshop.
Oh, I would love to do that. So I will be in touch with you about that. I'll call you.
Okay, super.
Thank you so much. All right, this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much, Judith Kravitz, and teaching us how to breathe our way home, bringing body, mind, and spirit together through the breath. I just love it. It's wonderful. Thank you so much. Take a few breaths, breathe them back out again, and fill them with love, and we will talk to you again next week. Good night.
All right. Thank you, Veronica.
Thanks, Judith.
Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Lots of love to you. Bye-bye.